Post-Arlen Monologics. Recovery Topics. Number 003. Change or Die.
Please note, the content of this podcast audio in no way reflects the attitudes, opinions, or positions of Alcoholics Anonymous, any other 12-step recovery organization, or any medical organization, but is rather opinions derived from the personal experience of the speaker. Certain subject matter may prove sensitive to some listeners. Personal discretion is advised.
Change or die. Now, way back in the way back, this was a slogan, if you will, that I personally used to throw around. Now, I can't say that it's mine, but I can say that I had never heard it before. It's just something that came out one night when I was sharing, and a friend of mine kind of latched onto it. And he's like, you know, I'm thinking about what you're saying. And then, like, I'd go to other meetings as the weeks went by. And this guy, he would raise his hand and he would share, and he would attribute the phrase, the slogan, change or die, to me, as if I had invented it. I'm sure I have not, and I'm not trying to suggest that I have. But what I can say is it's one that I lived by. You know, I kind of hung my hat on the concept of change or die. So what does that mean in terms of recovery and alcoholism? Let's just put it in this light. There's another phrase, and it's a great one, one of my favorites. The man I was will drink again. What we are saying when we say that is that we showed up into the rooms of AA, a broken down hoopty, a jalopy. We had all kinds of problems, and those problems were a perpetuation of our broken mentality and our inability to manage our own lives. And the rigmarole, the carousel of our thinking just drove us deeper and deeper down, like a downward spiral, like a toilet bowl, right? Our life was toilet water going down in the swill. And we cannot enter into recovery and expect to stay there very long with that exact creature at the helm of things, right? We have proven as alcoholics to be horrible managers of our lives, to be terrible captains of our situation. And that man, who all that man knew was drinking and all the torment and tumult and chaos that goes along with that lifestyle, well, he's just going to continue to run the ship aground in the same old manner. The man I was will drink again. See, that man's got to not be who is in charge. So, who's in charge? That's a very good question, right? That man is in charge until he starts to adapt into the ways of others who have a better way of living to offer, right? So we get into the idea of the higher power, right? The higher power and the conundrum that comes along with that early in recovery, right? We have the whole We Agnostics chapter that does a lot of focus on the second step, where we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity, right? So the implication is we are weak and we are insane, right? Coming in. So we need to be working with and really following along with some kind of power greater than ourselves. Now, until we can actually embrace the higher power, God with a capital G, as we start to work with in the following step, step three, right? We have to assume some other power greater than us. And we get into this idea of having your home group be the power greater than you, and your sponsor, you know, working with your sponsor, taking the lead of your sponsor, foregoing your own insane and stinking thinking, to take suggestions from people you have grown a little bit familiar with. And that is the beginning of the practice of actually turning your will over, right? Our will, our nature as alcoholics, you know, as pickled cucumbers, is to continue to pickle ourselves, right? A drunk does one thing and does one thing well, and that is drink. In our nature, we ought to be drinking. When we are not drinking, we are opposed to our nature. Opposed to our nature, we're like a fish out of water. We don't really know what to do, and we need help. So people give us suggestions, guidelines. They help us find a sponsor who becomes a very significant person in our lives, right? Hopefully, if it's a good person, you know, well, you could choose poorly. Because why? Because you're weak and insane, right? Coming into AA. We're fucked up people. And nothing, even the good things that we decide to do, may not be so good. You know, we really need to be held by the hand and guided along. We need to have things explained to us plainly and shown to us. Because why? We've got this natural resistance to the good things that are coming our way. Why? Because we're still guided by the force inside of us that will have us drinking and ultimately dead. When we're newcomers, that essence, that entity, has got us by the balls. And it's a struggle, you know, of AA and people trying to help. And help you help yourself, to grab you and hold you and call God and the angels into your life. Well, at the same time, this quote-unquote disease of alcoholism, this quote-unquote disorder of alcoholism, and whatever you want to call it, you know, this, I'll call it what I call it, the devil, right? The devil inside you, holding on, and they're just tearing you apart like a rag doll, trying to own and control you, one pulling you towards the light and to life and to love, and the other one pulling you to the darkness and hatred and death. You're just a lowly, insane, alcoholic newcomer, but you are caught up in this spiritual warfare, right? The most unlikely of things. I felt like the most unworthy of person, of people, to have any kind of connection at all spiritually to the creator of all things. That's kind of good news, you know, it's kind of good news. And that took me a whole long time to really get ultimately connected, right? To finally meet God on God's terms. I tried and I tried and I tried. And here's kind of what I'm getting at with the insanity that we bring in as we enter into AA as newcomers. We have this resistance to the good that is coming our way, and it drives us to make poor decisions on things. AA handed me God on a platter, and it handed me some people who could explain some of the most important things that I would ever hear. And I'm not a stupid guy. But I had this particular way of kind of neutering the information that was coming in, somehow blotting it out, not really absorbing it, and not letting it become a controlling and decisive factor in my progress. I kept on stunting my growth in my ongoing resistance against the good that was coming my way. And I'm not stupid, but yeah, I have done some really foolish things. And a lot of my tomfoolery was at the bloody hands of the devil that was trying to keep me drunk and get me dead. That's heavy. That's heavy, but that's where we're at. I mean, we in step two. We're right in the beginning. 2 out of 12. And we're already starting to banter about this idea of the power greater than ourselves, which we soon discover to actually be God with a capital G. Right? We're in the first three steps, which are the quote-unquote newcomer steps, the AA waltz, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. The things that I'm talking about now are within the parameters, within the confines of topics that are geared towards newcomers and those other who are yet early in recovery, right? And here we already are, almost from the get-go, bringing God into it. It takes three steps to use that G-O-D word, right? And it, step two is kind of warming us up to the idea. It's explaining to us that you're kind of fucking crazy and your own thinking cannot really be relied upon to pull you through here, and changes need to happen. And you're going to practice a personal relationship with God as you understand Him by submitting your crazy will to that of your home group and your sponsor, and give them the opportunity to prove out that this AA program works. This is the process that we get into. So change or die, right? Going back to the original topic. Change or die, the man I was will drink again. These changes have to be made. And perhaps the biggest change is happening right here. When we came to believe, you know, it's not something that you do in step two. It's somewhere where you suddenly find yourself. In time, applying principles that you're learning in AA, using the tools in the toolbox that you have acquired from the fellowship, you start to trust AA. That is your preschool to the kindergarten of your spiritual life to come. Your first beginning steps on the journey are leading you to God by having you trust those who have been led to God before you. Very interesting stuff, right? So we need to change or die, but a change is not something that we actually manifest in ourselves. Our hand in our own change is compliance with the principles and the steps, ultimately. Step two is about trusting the program of recovery. It's about trusting the people you know in your home group and your fellowship. It's about trusting your sponsor to guide you appropriately. And when that trust settles in on you, now we're ready to get into something a little heavier. It's that God with a capital G thing that comes in step three. There we make a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. In step two, we've done that sort of, kind of, in the process of learning how to trust AA. When we learn how to trust AA, now we're able to be taken by the hand and guided through and have things explained to us. that foster the process of change that we require in order to succeed and recover. But again, we do not manifest change on our own. We merely submit to what we're given. We believe in it. We take it in. We apply it. And change occurs. And as the change occurs, we start to become better people. Now, early on, as we enter into this situation, we are newcomers. We are early in recovery. And we find out, we have it clearly explained to us, that part of our problem, a big part of our problem, is that we have what's called self-will run riot. We are so inwardly focused. We are so self-centered. We are so driven by our own ambition and instinct, by our own desire, that we don't really care for the next person. We are desperados, and we know how to pretend to care. We've been cared for, and we probably have cared for people genuinely somewhere in our past. But somewhere along the way, that stopped mattering. When alcohol became the center of our existence, or for some people, when narcotics became the center of our existence, most everything else, in terms of our exhibition of some sort of care, was fraudulent. What I'm trying to say is we know how to pretend to get things that we want. We know how to act to get what we want. But it's always about getting what we want. Make no mistake about it. And we have been long at that. So we're crazy. And we don't get along well with others. Because we don't genuinely care about others. Part of the process of change that I'm talking about is learning to genuinely care about others again. And the biggest part of that is putting a distance between you and your last drink. The more distance you put between you and your last drink, the more strength you have against the devil that's holding on to your backside as you try to flee, right? Yeah, so we're selfish to the extreme. I mean, we're not just selfish. Everybody's a little selfish. You know, we have self-awareness, right? And we have explained to us, and I believe it's a 12 and 12, where a lot of our defects of character are instincts gone awry. There's a word for you, right? A-W-R-Y. I remember being early in recovery, and we'd read that during a step meeting. And Ori? What the fuck is that? No, it's awry. Oh, I've heard that word. I just never seen it actually written down and spelled out. Awry. Our instincts go awry. In other words, what it's trying to say is our instincts are somehow distorted, and they are not any longer functioning properly for our own good and for our survival. We have excessive desires to, say, drink, for one thing, right? Drinking is gluttonous activity. I mean, heavy drinking, over drinking, problem drinking, that is gluttonous. And, you know, how much do you need to drink to get on in a day, to live, you know, to be an effective person? Well, you need, a couple of glasses of water a day gets it done. But here you are drinking gallons of beer and quarts and fifths of whiskey in the process of a day. It's gluttonous. You're drinking way more than you need. You have an instinct that says, go wet your whistle, right? In the same lines as, you know, go eat something. Why? Because it's self-preservation. You have in your instincts, at the core of them all, survival. So this is part of surviving. But now, more than that, we are drinking not just water, and not just juice. We're drinking liquor. And drinking liquor does not ultimately equate to survival, right? You're outside the bounds of the core of your instinct to survive. But see, in our mind, we're twisted up. We're thinking, yeah, we absolutely have to have this to survive. That's what I thought. You know, I remember being early on in recovery, before I even got to an AA meeting. I was in a group therapy session, right? Giving the medical profession a crack at helping me out. And a counselor was explaining to me how this alcohol was killing me. That, yeah, I really need to drink if I want to live. And I was of the opposite opinion, for real, right? I really thought that the only reason I was alive was because of alcohol, that without it, I would have been dead a long time before. And I was convinced of that. I was absolutely convinced of that. That's what was keeping me alive. I had no idea that it was killing me. My mentality was so frayed, and I was so far off track, that I wasn't even able to do that basic math of my own survival, my own existence. It's crazy we are. It's one example of how crazy we are. I mean, that's how crazy I was, and I know y'all are going to be crazy too. So we got this selfishness, and we've got instincts that we are following, but the instincts are out of whack. They're not serving us the purpose of survival anymore. Their instincts gone awry. I hope my example explained that well enough. You can read in the 12 and 12, wherever that is, instincts gone awry. Where the hell is that? Is that step 4 in the 12 and 12? It may be. I ought to know better at this point. But yeah, just look up the word, index the word A-W-R-Y. It may be the only time you see it in any literature anywhere. But anyway, you know, so we've got this fucked up instincts. You know, part of it is like pride, right? Pride is an instinct. The vanity, it's a self-awareness that I was talking about. We all have a degree of self-awareness, and we start to have that basic instinct, that basic sense about ourselves in the world go awry as well, right? And our self-awareness becomes pride, becomes vanity, becomes narcissism. It goes down that whole track through this entire spectrum of being far from reasonable, right? Awry again, right? Your self-awareness gone awry goes down that road of narcissism. And it's really funny because, you know, we come in, like I said before, step 2, we're weak and we're insane, but we've got this massive vanity to the point of narcissism. And we're, you know, on one hand, like, we're egomaniacs, and you'll hear this in meetings, right? Well, you'll hear a basic descriptor of the internal mechanisms of psychological mechanisms of alcoholics as being an egomaniac with an inferiority complex, right? There's a paradox right there. You know, egomaniac, you're high about yourself and you think you're great, and then at the same time, you're very well aware of how inferior you are. And how do you conduct yourself like that? I don't know how the fuck I live that way. And the fact of the matter is, I think that the inferiority complex aspect of my psyche was alive and kicking in so much as I wasn't drinking. So I would drink to combat that, and then I would have this false sense of some kind of Superman figure that I am. You know, and we get into the ego at that point, right? The ego. I'll talk about ego at some point later on, like the easing God out aspect of it, right? Easing God out, ego, E-G-O, easing God out. This is a matter of, again, submission, right? Submission. Turning your will over is submitting yourself to the guidance and parameters of something you respect and aspire to, something greater than yourself, right? That's why we call God, higher power, until we're ready to accept the word God with a capital G as palatable. Many of us have a problem with that. But easing God out, right? The more of us, the less of God. That's how it goes. The less of us, the more of God. The more of us, the more wreckage. The more of God, the more miracles and mysticism and wonder. This is an internal struggle that we go through in the process of change, right? The more godless we perceive ourselves to be, or when we perceive ourselves to be more godless than we want to be, it's really a red flag to say that we've kind of let our egos run riot, right? Our self-will run riot. We're kind of pulling out. We're kind of pulling out of our spirituality and trying to take the reins and see if we can't mismanage our whole situation really poorly one more fucking time. Right? But yeah, we're egomaniacs with an inferiority complex. We have this paradox within our psyche that operates between vanity and self-loathing. I mean, that's what's going on, right? There's this vanity that puts ourselves superior and aloof to everybody else, and then we've got this other personal reality that actually hates our own selves to the point of suicide. You know, basically what you have is, to one extreme you got homicide, the other extreme you got suicide. Right? Do you want to kill everybody else or you want to kill yourself? And somewhere in the middle is a balance, and I regard that as humility. We learn about humility when we get into step six, right? So that's kind of way off the track for newcomers, but you know, our balance between these extremes happens there. We have at the place of humility a truer version of who we really are. So, ergo, right? Ergo, that's a word I never use. Ergo, when we are new in our recovery, when we are newcomers to AA, part of our insanity is this kind of duality in our psyche with these two extremes that have no actual balance in the middle. And we have no actual true understanding or recognition of exactly who we really are. That comes through the process of change. As we are changing, I have this expression, like there's a peeling back of the layers of the onion, right? You learn more going deeper and deeper to the core of all things as you go along. And that's what we do. We have this process. It's like unmasking our own selves. We start to see a truer vision of ourselves as we go through this process of change. And this process of change is structured through the 12 steps, the program of recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous, and it goes from a beginning to an end. And in the beginning is this self-centeredness, right? This extreme self-centeredness and, you know, the selfishness of it all. And on the other end of the spectrum, when you've gone through the steps, you become a lot more selfless than you had been, right? That's the big transition. A saying that we have in AA, very common, you'll see it, you'll hear it frequently, to thine own self be true, right? To thine own self be true. Now, it's hard to be true to yourself when you don't know who the fuck you are. So now we got to go back to this trusting in AA, right? Trusting in AA, trusting the fellowship, trusting the literature, trusting the program, more so than we trust ourselves, right? None of those things are 100% spot on perfect, especially the fellowship part of it. You will get hurt. There will be drama. There will be problems and conflict, you know. I will not lie. It depends on how you are able to swim and float. You know, you're getting thrown to the wolves of a potentially crazy situation. not to harp on that too much, but just, you know, give a realistic picture. To thine own self be true. We need to learn ourselves, and we don't get to learn ourselves until we actually learn to trust AA in spite of all its misgivings, and then learn to trust God. Then we start to peel off the layers of the onions, or we start to peel off masks layer by layer that cover our own face, and we start to see who we are. As we start to see who we really are, then we can be true to ourselves. But we don't know who we are in the beginning. No, but you can be honest with that fact. Like step two says, you know what? I'm insane. Let's just say I'm insane. Let's just go with that fact that I'm insane, okay? That's what AA is telling me I am. So let's just say I am and see where we go from here. That's actually being true to yourself. Because you are insane. You wouldn't be where you're at. You wouldn't be at step two in AA, a newcomer, unless you belonged in AA. If you belong in an AA at that stage, you're insane. You're insane. Just a simple and very sad fact of it. Now, as we peel these layers of the onion, and as we uncover the mask, the layers of masks that will eventually reveal our own true face, the process of change, that transition from selfishness to selflessness, is actually also a process of character building, right? Character building. I define character, and you could look up in the dictionary for yourself if you want to. It's a term that's frequently muddled when you look at dictionary definitions with other words like integrity and morality and things like that. They're kind of integrated words, maybe subtly different in their usage, but ultimately more or less meaning the same thing. There's a relationship between them all. But I define character in these very provincial terms. It's like this. Character is doing the right thing when nobody's there looking at you, right? Doing the right thing when nobody's watching. Think about that a second. Let that settle in. All right. We are some low character motherfuckers as active alcoholics, and we remain such early in our recovery because we have not gone through the full and complete vigorous process of character building. Character building occurs as we practice the principles of these steps in all our affairs, and as we mount successes, as we deal daily, one day at a time, with life on life's terms, we start to have victories, first against our disease of alcoholism, and then against life and the world itself as we go along. Because when something difficult comes our way, life on life's terms, it could be a flat tire on your vehicle, it could be a divorce, you could lose your job, right? When things come along that are difficult to deal with, things that come along that when you didn't want to deal with it, you felt you couldn't deal with it, you dealt with it by going out and getting drunk, right? Now you stay sober, you meet it head on, and you learn that problems have a way of moving into the past when you meet them head on. An amazing thing. I remember when I was drinking, and I would have a problem, and I would drink and ignore the problem, and the problem would just stay there. And usually it would get worse. It would get bigger and bigger and bigger. But now we learn dealing life on life's terms, and as we deal with life on life's terms, at the right pace, without resorting to getting drunk, we start to score these victories, and our character starts to build in the process of that. We start to take place in civilization, in society again. Remember, part of the insanity and part of the results and the wreckage that we've incurred as we start into the program of recovery, as we start into AA, is the distrust that we've generated in the people around us. We have to win that trust back again to be normal functioning members of our society. we cannot regain trust of people without being authentically improved. You quit drinking, you go to a couple of AA meetings, you go home, your wife is threatening to leave you. You say, I swear I'll not drink again, I'll never drink again. She doesn't believe you. You've said that so many times before, you've punched her in the mouth so many times before, you've cheated on her so many times before, she's fucking done. But you swear up and down, this time it's going to be different. Why should she believe you? She ain't going to believe you. She ain't going to believe you until you have genuinely, authentically made some serious internal changes. There's no going to AA meetings for a day, a week, a month, even a year, and realistically expecting somebody to buy your line of bullshit. It will remain your line of bullshit until you're able somehow to prove otherwise. And the proof is in the pudding. You're going to be judged on your character. And somehow, some way, we inherently can perceive the character of a person. Don't you think? Especially somebody as close to you as a spouse. Anyway, character building is something that occurs in this process. And the more character we build, the more trust we gain or regain, as the case may be. We start to be handed the keys to the kingdom. You know, people just start believing in us as if we're actually like normal human beings again. It's amazing. Now, the first signs you'll start to see is you'll get nominated to be the coffee maker for your home group. Well, that means you got to come early and get all set up. That means they got to give you a key to the building. Wow, there's some trust right there. You're just a low-life piece of shit alcoholic, and somebody gave you keys to an entire facility. How do you like that? That's where trust begins. Now, you start to build on that from there. And, you know, whatever you think you can build on your own, most of the job is done just by you suiting up and showing up, doing the next right thing, following the suggestions that your sponsor gives you, applying the lessons that you learn in your AA meetings, in your home group. So we go through character building, and then we look at the primary purpose, right? Again, wow, it's all we could do to earn enough trust to have our AA group nominate us to do the coffee maker job and give us a key to the building. Or you look at the primary purpose when you get out the other side of the 12 steps. What is that? Stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. You're no longer there sucking on the great tit of AA. Take, 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 take. Now it's time to give, 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 give. That's a whole different perspective on things, don't you think? Right? And we've gone from being a low character motherfucker and being completely selfish to now starting to show signs of being a man or woman of integrity and generosity. Again, giving. Why? Integrity would be the opposite of your low character status. Generosity is the giving where all along you'd been taking. It's all about you trying to fulfill your instincts gone awry, your base desires that are out of place and not conducive for your own survival, contrary to your original insane thinking, right? You were actually killing yourself all along and you thought otherwise. I had one sponsor in these regards, right? The idea of integrity and generosity, challenging me to practice a thing called altruism, right? A-L-T-R-U-I-S-M. To be altruistic is to do things for other people without expecting anything in return, and to ensure that you don't even let them know you've done it for them. An example would be if you have a friend, family, somebody you know who's coming up a little short on their income and can't quite pay their electric bill this month. And somehow you find out. So you throw $150 in an envelope, slide it in their mailbox or through a crack open window in their car. No name, no nothing. Let them find it. Let them have it and never bring it up again. Altruism, right? Can you do that? Can you do something for somebody else without having to take the credit, without having to get a pat on the back, without having to be lifted up on a pedestal, without any applause or anything? Can you just do because it's a good thing to do? And let the world have the credit for it? Let God above have the credit for it? That's what altruism is. And I had a good enough sponsor to actually put me to that, to practice that. And as we practice that, it's another plateau that we reach in our character building process, right? Now look how far I've gone in this discussion. Dial it back, the original topic, change or die. Look at the amount of change that has occurred, all right? We're talking about changing in recovery as it involves alcoholism. I'm not talking about changing from somebody who drinks to somebody who doesn't drink. We're not talking about putting a plug in a jug. We're talking about a profound transition from one fucked up kind of person to somebody who actually has a fitting place in society at large. We've gone from somebody who nobody wanted around to somebody who actually belongs and to some degree fits in. None of us ever fit in, right? But to some degree we do. We were that person that couldn't hold a job. We got fired everywhere we went, or we quit. And it's not always that case, but often, you know, when you're really drunk and really drinking and you're working for somebody that doesn't value you enough to deal with it, you're fired. If you're somebody who's been with the same company for 20 years and they recognize that you got a drinking problem, they might try to help you through it. But you keep on with it once they recognize it and you keep fucking up, they'll fire you eventually anyway, right? But either way, you know, we're a kind of person, at best, they're looking at us cross-eyed on our job. At worst, they're just punting us right out the fucking door, right? We've gone from that kind of person to, and you'll see it, you'll see it. You become the reliable person on the job. You're the guy who don't drink. That means you show up on time every morning and mentally ready to go, while so many of your coworkers were out the night before tying one on. They come in, they're kind of cloudy, foggy, they might be running late, they might be nauseous, hungover. Some of them might not show up at all, drinking too much, right? Some of them drink on the job, some of them drink on their lunch break, they come back, but you're not that guy. You become that person that the management relies on. That's a big switch. You were the total bum. Now you're the reliable one. That is generally true for all recovering alcoholics when they go into the workplace. Something about being sober and something about building character. And it starts to compound exponentially as you go through time. Baby steps at first, but all of a sudden, big chunks. The growth starts coming in. It's really an amazing thing to see. So you're talking about the primary purpose, right? Primary purpose, stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety, right? You've achieved sobriety. Now all you got to do is maintain that. And part of your maintenance of that is actually giving it away, helping other people. It matters, right? And that becomes a practice for your real or your ultimate purpose, right? There is an AA, a real purpose. Sometimes we call it ultimate purpose. real purpose. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God, with a capital G, and the people about us. Okay? Now, we're not just talking about AA people. We're not talking about the fellowship anymore. The fellowship is like a proving grounds for all this. It's like a place of practice, a playground, to learn these principles and apply them with other people who are doing the same thing, while you have maybe some old timers observing and kind of helping you through. But eventually, you got to walk out the door of that room and go out into the real world and deal with real people. And you see what happens here? Our real purpose is actually being able to deal with real people in real situations. We are not meant to be chained down to the rooms of AA. And it is what we learn there, what our character becomes there, is not meant to be reserved only for recovering alcoholics. This is meant to make you into a fully functioning member of society at large. It's an amazing transformation that occurs. It's a big deal. It's a really big deal. Do you want to become something of a normal person? Do you want to regain the trust of your family and friends and employers? Do you want one more crack at life, this time without alcoholism at the helm? Do you want to shut the door on all of your nightmares and begin to live the dream? Miracles are waiting for you. suit up, show up, and grow up.
Thank you for tuning in to Post-Arlen Monologics. When considering subject matter as vital as addiction's recovery, it is advisable to take what you want and leave the rest, and confer with others who have experience with 12-step recovery to form a broader scope of understanding. For more information on Alcoholics Anonymous, please visit aa.org. If you require immediate assistance, please call the 24-hour AA helpline at 800-839-1686.